Before we get into the episode, I just want to give you a heads up that there is a review for Shovel Knight on backofmyplay.com if you're still on the fence. There's even an audio version if you want to multitask while at the computer. And don't forget to check out Jake Kaufman's soundtrack for Shovel Knight on Bandcamp. You can see it at virt.bandcamp.com, and it's pay what you like, but I think it is well worth contributing some cash to that thing if you want to download it. It is fantastic. Welcome back to Back in My Play. We're doing a little bit of a special episode to talk about Shovel Knight from Yacht Club Games. I have David D'Angelo. David,
hello.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
So we're using the magic of Skype to talk about a game that is really like based upon things that came out in the late 80s and early 90s. So that's just even extra special, but that's pretty much what we do with the podcast anyways. So I want to talk to you first. Before we get into anything, I want a little bit of a background on you. Like, what is your gaming history? Did you, like, grow up in the NES era? Was that where you started off, or were you, like, all the way back to the 2600? Where were you?
I grew up with the NES. I got my first NES when I was 2 years old.
Nice.
Yeah, I grew up, you know, like trying to figure out how to move Mario on the screen and like read the English. So I mean, I grew up really young. I think our family had one of the first NESs ever made, actually, because the way I got an NES was my uncle, who lived in New Jersey, bought it and brought it down and gave it to us as a present. And this was like, you know, 1987 or so, when Nintendo was actually like first putting out the NES, they were only putting it out in Northern New Jersey and New York City.
That's right.
As like a test run. So I actually think I might have one of the first ones they put out in America.
I bet it's still running today.
Yeah, it still works great, actually.
Things are built like tanks. We're going to get into talking about Shovel Knight a little bit, but Nintendo has always been great about their hardware. Every single piece of Nintendo hardware I've had has been great, except for like swapping out the 72-pin adapter on NES. I even like playing Shovel Knight. I literally, no joke, threw my 2DS across the room, like 12 feet. It slammed into the wall, still running, like not even a dent on the thing, not a scratch on it. That
wow.
thing is built like a tank.
That's pretty awesome.
Right back to plan. But it's like anything. It's like, this is why I think people are loving this game so much, is it just brings back those moments of throwing your controller just because, oh, I was right there. I almost beat that boss, or I just barely missed like jumping past
it. Yeah, it brings out the passion.
Totally. I don't know what that magic formula is, but you guys kind of hit on it. So, you know, besides like your gaming history, let's stick on the NES for a second, because there's like a lot of influence in this game based on like the classics, whether it be stuff coming from Capcom or Nintendo or Konami or whatever. So when you were in that era, like what were your favorite games? Like, were you just like all about Mega Man and like Castlevania and that stuff?
Oh, I mean, like I played anything I could get my hands on, you know, like every Nintendo game was like everything published by Nintendo I played. I mean, I was super into everything from Capcom. Like, Mega Man was probably like my favorite thing. Castlevania was huge. Like, I was really into Contra. Mm-hmm. I was into, like, it didn't matter what the game was. When I was young, and even now, I still don't, you know, I'd like play whatever NES game I can find, because there are always like these small weird experiences. But like, especially when I was young, like I had no like judge. I wasn't able to say like, that's a good game or that's a bad game. It's like, oh, that's another game and I get to play it. I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. Even if it's like, Where's Waldo on the NES, which is like a terrible game, but
come on, man, there's nothing good to be found in that game.
But like, as a kid, I loved playing it, because it was just like another thing. You know, it's like, if you get a new toy, you don't really care what the toy is when you're a kid. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, it's like, you just, all right, well, I got a new game, so I don't care what it is. I just want to play it because it's brand new, because I've played the crap out of everything.
Yeah, it's so exciting to have a new game, so. I mean, that was like my experience as a kid. And like when I grew up, it was just like, you just go into stores and you would find the weirdest NES games and that were so interesting. Like, I don't know, like Shatterhand or.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's just like, there are all these gems and there are all these tiny developers that were like trying to make it big or trying to do new things or weird things, or it's just like there was no baseline for what games were, right? So it's like they just made something that made sense to them, and it just makes those games so interesting, I think, to play like now.
Yeah, I think even the NES, just because of how wide the gap is in terms of quality and like the graphical capabilities of what that thing was able to do with like extra chips and just people being able to unlock the power of that hardware. It went from like, what, 83 to 93 they were making, or 94 they were even making games in Japan. Until then, it was crazy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And I mean, you're talking about like, I mean, the thing was built like basically for the cartridges to like support new technology, right? So yeah. Like the difference between like a 1994 NES game and a 1985 NES game is like enormous.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So it's like, it's just like such a fun system to explore.
So like today we're in 2014. Are you still like collecting for the NES? Do you still find yourself hooking that thing back up? Because that is, I mean, that's what our podcast is all about. And it's funny that you brought up Shatterhand, because we even covered that game and like the audience is just crazy about still buying these carts and like having them in the house.
Yeah. I mean, I still do it. Yeah. Like, I mean, the most recent one that I remember discovering is my friend has a Famicom, and he got YY World, which is probably something you've never heard of.
Oh, I have one and two.
Oh, you have one and two.
Well, I love them.
Okay, well, like I found YY World, and I was like, oh my god, this is like the most perfect NES game ever made.
Yeah, so explain that a little bit, because we never got those over here, but you think it would be like, it's like the. It's like the I don't know, how would you put it? It's like the all-star game of Konami characters in
yes.
the game.
Yeah, that's a perfect description. It's a co-op. Well, I mean, YY World 2 is different than 1, but the first one is, yeah, it's like a, you know, 2D platformer. It's got like all the Konami, like, well, I don't know if you call them stars or what, but it's got like Simon Belmont and it's got like the Konami man, which was like a thing in Japan, but not here. And then, you know, it's got like the Mikey from the Goonies, yep. And I don't know who else is in that thing. It's so bizarre. It's like King Kong. No, is he in there? No.
There is like a gorilla looking character.
Yeah, I think it is supposed to be King Kong. Maybe, I don't know. Anyway, it's just like so random. But it's like the games that were hits that they had characters from that they could put in the game, and yeah, just this weird. Like a mix of like Mega Man and like Konami's game. Like you can choose your level and then it's so weird. It's such an interesting game. And like co-op platformer on the NES, that's like super bizarre.
Yeah, it's totally worth picking up if you have a Famicom, or even I guess the Retron 5 plays Famicom games on it too.
Cool.
Highly recommend picking it up, just because it's like, it's one of those crazy weird games that, since Konami games were huge in the United States, you would think we would get that thing, but hopefully Nintendo's been doing like some weird stuff, like bringing over Japanese virtual console games.
Yeah, I would be pretty shocked if they brought that over. That'd be interesting.
Oh, do it, Nintendo, do it. Make me happy. All right, so all right, that's all awesome stuff. Talking about just your background and the history in general, is this the first game that you've worked on, or you've been basically making games for a while? What have you been up to?
I started at WayForward, and that was maybe 5 years ago now. So I've been making games for a while. I've probably put out like 12 games in that time.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So like, I don't know, like 2 a year, I guess, on average. And, I've worked on Double Dragon Neon, Blood Rain Betrayal.
Okay, this is all right. I have to stop for a second because I swear to God, Double Dragon Neon comes up like every other episode, just because of how awesome that game is, and for Jake's soundtrack that he did for that game is just amazing.
Well, thank you. Yeah, Jake is a machine that just like outputs perfection. He is so good.
So being at WaveForward, obviously, did you get to also work on – you guys were Mighty Switch Force too, right?
Yeah, I didn't work on Mighty Switch Force, but like some people on our team mm-hmm. worked on Mighty Switch Force. I mean, I did Mighty – the Mighty game I did was Mighty Milky Way, which no one played, but
– Well, it's just like – it's just so cool to see these companies, and I got to ask, like – it. You know, making these almost, I mean, they're really like retro inspired games. That's why it's so great that I'm so pumped to start reviewing this stuff and to talk about it in that context. But are you just like more attracted to making these games that you feel like you could have made on like the Super Nintendo or the NES compared to like working 3 years on a new, you know, third person shooter or something like that?
Well, I'm definitely more interested in making like smaller games that like I can be a major part of the development, right? Like I don't want to be like working on the cloud simulation in Skyrim for like 4 years. It's like, oh great, like 10 people looked up in the sky and liked it, you know? I love being able to make these tiny games. Mm-hmm. Or not tiny, but like much smaller scale. But like that set, like, I mean, so I'd like to make like anything under that umbrella, but like making retro style games is like awesome. And like, you know, like when we got told like, oh, you're going to work on Double Dragon or like that, like, or you get to like work on A Boy and His Blob or whatever. It's like, those are so cool. You know, even like working for a Batman license game, it's like what game are you looking to? You're like looking to like Batman on the NES, right? Or
of course.
It's like, it feels like such a huge honor to like be fitting into that like history of amazing games.
This is crazy. I didn't know about this, but you've like worked on some of my favorite games the last couple of years, including like Boy and His Blob on the Wii.
Yeah.
Oh, Boy and His Blob. Man, that if you haven't played that game, track down a copy of it and try not to like go, oh, like every time like the boy like hugs the blob and stuff like that, just like it totally just you know crushes me inside, man. That's just so sweet. Okay, so for you know, just kind of going forward in terms of like Shovel Knight, what were you working on with that game? Were you designing levels? And you know, this is partially my fault. I really didn't do a lot of background, but also we weren't sure who we were going to talk to. So I'd love to hear what you did on the game.
Yeah, so my main role was a programmer. So I did, you know, I implemented gameplay, like I, you know, made all the bosses work and like figured out the designs for them. Things like that. And I also did like, you know, getting the game to run on the Wii U and getting it to run on the 3DS. Like, so like all over the gamut programming wise. But like that said, we're a very small team. You know, there's just like half a dozen of us. So like, you know, I was, you know, in all of the art conversations, I was in all of the design conversations. I was, you know, managing like the QuickBooks. I was like doing the marketing. It's like, we all like had our hands in everything.
Well, that's funny. Like you mentioned the marketing, like I was looking for some PR assistance and you were the guy that answered the call. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, like I'm answering like 500 emails a day. It's like, it's pretty crazy.
It's lots of fun.
How all over the map, like my job is right now, I guess.
I mean, you brought up like creating, you know, boss battles and things like that. What is like, is there a research process that you have to go through to figure out what mechanics that you want to use? Because, you know, as I was playing through the game, like you can tell there's lots of influences from games of the past. So did you feel like you wanted to make like any like homages or anything to games that you loved growing up?
Actually, it was like sort of the opposite in a mm-hmm. sense. Like we really wanted to make Shovel Knight be its own thing mm-hmm. and not have any homages and not have any like direct call outs. Like, I mean, like the example we always give is like, we don't want you to like walk up to like some NPC and for him to say like, take this, like, you know, you'll be whatever the Zelda dude says. But like, we didn't want you to be like taken out of the world because it was something you experienced in another game. But that said, like NES and all video games are like infused into our blood. Like we play them constantly. We're always looking, you know, like we do look back to games like, hey, like this is what we want to do. Like say we want to implement a map, right? We want to implement a map system, and we look at what games did that well and like what were the problems and like what could we do better. So like we're looking at Super Mario 3. So obviously like you're going to feel like the world map in our game is like somewhat like Super Mario 3, right? And just like we're following a huge history of games that like our game is going to feel like other games just inherently. And we're trying to create something like that calls back to those games, but in a way that's like, you know, if you would have picked up Shovel Knight in like 1987, like it would have felt like a totally new experience, right? Like like people in 1987 were probably saying like Mega Man is like Mario, right? But it's like, not really. But like, that's the only thing you can compare it to. And it's like, now we just have so many more things you can compare it to in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point to bring up just from playing through the game. Like one of the things that I've been writing down for the review is like, I feel I go two screens forward and there's a brand new enemy with whole different mechanics that I have to try to address, like whole different movement patterns that I need to try to learn. And like that was like one of the things when I threw the 2DS, I'm like, man, I figured out this boss's mechanics, but just too late. And then he just got in a lucky shot on me. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go back again. it's such an interesting setup because you guys obviously, I mean, it's kind of an 8-bit game, but you use a lot of or at least it's optional to use a lot of the mechanics that we're used to today, like checkpoints where you can use them if you want to, which I was glad to have them. Right. But some people, if they're, you know, crazy hardcore and have the patience, they can destroy them for extra gold and stuff like that. So I guess I would love to hear, like, what were those discussions like? Did you have a lot of discussions about, all right, how base do we make this on something that would come out in, like you said, like 1987 or 1988, compared to what people are used to on most things that come out today?
Yeah, so I mean, that was like a major thing we were talking about over the project. One, in terms like we wanted it to be very accessible. Like I would say, like a goal of Shovel Knight would be that like a person that has never played Shovel Knight would be like, wow, like this game is really cool. Like NES games might be cool. Like maybe I should go try playing some other NES games. And it's like, maybe they'd be able to understand, like walking into Castlevania 1 nowadays for like a new gamer, I think would be like extremely off-putting. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like people don't make jumps in games that aren't like Mario anymore. Cause like, that's what the standard is. And like everyone decided that was a good jump. Mm-hmm. So like to go into like have a canned jump like Castlevania is like, whoa, this like game controls like crap, right? Or like his whip takes like 45 minutes to come out. Like this game is like designed so badly. But like those people they've never had the experience of like having something so new and odd like that to understand like, oh, this game is like designed around those mechanics, right? And I think like the goal with Shovel Knight was like to sort of give you a little taste of what that felt like. So when you went, so you said like, oh, NES games are cool, I'll try Castlevania. And you would be able to see like what the cool things are about Castlevania when you were playing it. And so that was like one thing we were trying to deal with, was like the new people. And then the other part was like the old people, which is like, you know, if I loved those NES games, like you probably loved them because they were hard or because they were, you know, these like, this certain experiences, like they were a platformer that like had these kinds of challenges or whatever. So it's like, how do we like fit those two camps into something that's like, how do we please everyone in that scenario? So a lot of it, like, yeah, a lot of the design decisions were like, you know, like how you mentioned with the checkpoints, it's like the checkpoint is like well, usually in an NES game, you had like one checkpoint in the level, right? Or not, you didn't even have a checkpoint. So it's like, well, how can we give like the old gamer that experience and the new gamer like what they would experience now, which is like you could have a checkpoint anytime you wanted. Mm-hmm. so we decided like, let's put a lot of checkpoints, but let's make it so you can like deactivate the checkpoints. So you didn't have to use them if you didn't want to. And like a lot of those decisions were basically like built around that. Like, you know, you don't have to use these relics, the sub weapons, if you don't want to, you know, like we tried to build things in. So if like, if you were really good at the game, it felt like the way you were abusing the game was like you being smart rather than like the game feeling easy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it was like a very difficult process, I would say, like, you know, just in between like getting what everyone at the team wanted out of the game and like what we wanted for everyone else. And we had just come off like, you know, Double Dragon Neon, and especially like Bloodline Betrayal got like really attacked for being too difficult. Mm-hmm. So it's like trying to, and then, you know, we're trying to make an NES game, which is like what, when anyone comes up to us, like when we're at a convention before the game came out, they'd be like, is this going to be NES hard? Right. So it's like, no, it's like not like we're going to try to not make it NES hard. But like from our past, we had only made NES hard games. So it's like, we don't know how to do, like we're scared that we wouldn't be able to like create something that wasn't NES hard. Cause that's like where our passions lie a lot of the time.
I don't know, man. From someone that in the last year has for the first time beaten Castlevania, on the PC Engine. Why am I
putting the name? Oh my god, Castlevania Xer.
Yeah,
is that the right one?
Jeez, Rondo Blood. Sorry,
Rondo Blood. Yeah.
And for same thing with like a couple Mega Man games and just Super Mario Brothers 3. Like last month for the first time, like completing all the stages. This game has some hard platforming. This game is like difficult, but again, you manage it with the checkpoints. Like,
right.
You make it so if you know you need to, you go back to the checkpoint, you're good to go again. And even the penalty from death isn't too bad because you're just losing some money and you can just pick it back up again.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like somewhere in between. Like, it's a hard game, but it's still, it's like way, it's a lot easier than like Castlevania or Ninja Gaiden, right?
There you go. Yeah.
It's like there's no BS in it. There's no like bird that flies into you over the pit with, like that's you know, you have to take damage in order to get by or whatever. But and there's like, you know, it's not, there's no like inconsistency in the design. Like, oh, why did they send me back two levels instead of one level? And it's like, yeah, and like the gap between like the stuff you have to replay is like much smaller because the number of checkpoints that are there. Like, so there's like lots of ways where like being nicer to the player, I think, while like still giving you a pretty hefty challenge.
What's that thing of like respecting a gamer's time today when there's 1,000 things that come out a week and, you know, they can just go to the next thing on the list or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, that's like always a challenging thing for us. Right. Cause the problem when you're designing a game is you don't want to like mislead the player, right? You don't want the player to like bang their head against the wall all the time to like, you know, cause we have like, for example, like we have a lot of checkpoints, right? And we don't want the player to think like the game is all about like dying 1,000 times between each checkpoint. Cause like, that's not what it's about. It shouldn't take, you know, maybe once or twice between each checkpoint would be like good. Mm-hmm. But like in an NES, like in a game like Ninja Gaiden, where you go like way back, you understand, like, I have to be really good at this game to progress, right? Like, I can't bang my head against the wall. Like, I need to figure it out. I need to like practice. I need to learn about it. So like, there's this like a struggle in order to like let the player know exactly like how difficult the game is and not like, yeah, you don't want to waste their time, but like going back a far distance in order to like tell the player, like, you need to be able to play this like without any problem where you won't be able to get through the rest of the game is like an important message to deliver. And it's hard to do without like making the player feel like it's BS.
Have you ever seen Game Center CX? Have you seen that weird Japanese
show? Yeah, I've seen that.
Okay, that is like, if you watch the episode when he's playing that game, he just looks like he is like a defeated man. Like,
yeah, I think I've seen that episode.
It's fantastic. I want to continue talking a little bit about the game, but also want to mention for people out there that don't know, it's of course available. I meant to mention this before. It's available on 3DS and the Wii U and also Steam. How did you guys lock in those platforms? How did you kind of decide which platforms you wanted to go for the release?
Well, we did a Kickstarter, right?
And that's right.
At the start of the Kickstarter, Kickstarter is a PC machine, right? It's like you can only donate it on a PC, like through a browser. So we figured like the game had to be on PC, and that's where we started with. And then what platforms would make sense to put Shovel Knight on, right? And like when we're talking about an NES game, it's like we're talking about Nintendo's. Like it should be on a Nintendo system. Like that's the home of that kind of game. And like I think the fans that like love NES games are probably the ones that are still buying, you know, when the Wii U isn't selling well, it's still probably bought by like mostly like the lovers of NES.
Totally.
Like the people that have been like Nintendo fans like from the beginning. So like that's what made sense to us, and in, you know, when like what like we the Wii U and the 3DS were like having not a lot of games at the time when we were thinking about this. So like what were they pushing? They were pushing NES games, you know, like they put out NES Remix. Mm-hmm. It's like they're still pushing like this line of games that like matched ours. So it just felt like being on a Nintendo platform made a lot of sense, like barring the fact that like the Wii U wasn't doing well. And, you know, that said, we also had, from working at WayForward, we had connections at Nintendo. So like we immediately sent them a message that was like, hey, like, would you guys be okay if we went with the Wii U and the 3DS and put it up as an option on our Kickstarter? And they were like very cool and worked with us.
Awesome.
To do that.
It's just like the thing with the Wii U and the 3DS, it seemed like it just came out at the perfect time because, like you said, there isn't, like, whenever something comes out on the Wii U, it's like an awesome game. So it's pretty much just like a, you know, waiting for that next release, and you guys just seem to come out at the perfect time. And I don't remember the article exactly, but it seems like the game sold pretty well on both the Wii U and the 3DS.
Yeah, it's sold pretty like evenly across all three platforms, which
That's
is like,
awesome.
Yeah, really exciting to see. Nintendo was like really supportive in like pushing our game and like making sure it was well marketed.
I have a crazy question from Brian Davis, this guy that's at Next Level Games. He's always sending weird stuff to the show. But, and this is a super, like, I know you guys have probably always gotten the question, like, is there going to be like a Super Nintendo sequel to it? Like, is that what you're going to do for the next one? But he wants to know, are there any plans to make Shovel Knight 64? If so, thank you.
We've put that out there a lot of times. Like Sean, who's like a designer at the company, and me are like obsessed with Super Mario 64.
Of course, why not? I mean, why wouldn't you be? It's like the best. It's probably one of the best three games on the platform. It's awesome.
Yeah. So like, I mean, it's well, like, yeah. Everyone like pitches Super Shovel Knight, and So, like, in our heads, we kept being like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we did, like, the whole line of, like, we brought, you know, we took Shovel Knight through, like, all of the ages of gaming, right? Mm-hmm. But it's just, like, every time we talk about Shovel Knight 64, it's like our eyes light up. It's like we're so excited. Like, how could that down thrust work in 3D? I have no idea. It's like, how could, you know, how would that game play? It's just like a whole new world. And like being able to make a 3D platformer would just be so cool. And it feels like such a gap in gaming right now, mm-hmm. that like, you know, like Super Mario 64 is like a way different game, I would say, than like, than Super Mario 3D World, mm-hmm. or even Super Mario Galaxy, I would say. Like, those games are amazing. But it's like a really different feeling or experience when you play Super Mario 64. And I'm not sure what about it feels so different, but I think like trying to capture like what was fun about that game and like what, like the fun parts of that game that feel like missing from modern games would be like a really cool experience to do. That said, we don't have any plans right now. Like we're set to make Shovel Knight for another year, because all the stretch goals we have to do.
Well, that's, I'm sorry, but Brian, you're probably going to have to wait on that a little
yeah,
bit.
You're going to have to wait a little bit, but hopefully one day.
Yeah, hopefully one day. And that's like, it's such a weird era, that like PS1 N64 era, where people don't have as much like nostalgia for it. They don't think those games hold up as well. But I mean, N64 games are obviously a lot better, or they hold up a lot better than the PS1 stuff and you know, the Sega Saturn 3D. But it would be a nice little hole to fill for people to start making like N64 games again instead of Super Nintendo, like, era and stuff like that. Do you have any, like, specific... sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I actually think there is a big market for, like, 64 games and even PS1 era, like, style games. And I don't think people realize it. You know, just on IGN, like, yesterday, 2 days ago, Marty Sliva wrote an article that was like, I wish Splatoon was more like Banjo-Kazooie, right? It's just, I think there are a lot of people that are like coming of age right now, mm-hmm. that started with the 64 or started with the PlayStation. And it's like, that's, and there's no mark, like no one's making those kind of games.
Yeah, is it, I mean, I'm not a designer or programmer or whatever, but is it a real leap in terms of the time that it would take to do a 3D game over a 2D game?
Oh, I mean, it definitely depends on like what exactly you're doing, but in general, I would say yes. Like, I mean, especially like the NES game we were making, I mean, like compared to like the, you know, like a Buenos Blob full HD, like beautiful, you know, hand-drawn animation, like the pixel art for like a boss is like 10 frames or something, as opposed to like a boss in Buenos Blob might be like 1,000 frames of animation, you know. And that, like, that idea goes to 3D, like, you know, rigging and modeling a character and like building these like giant world is just like extremely time consuming and difficult to do.
It's hard to harness that Project Reality graphics technology of the Nintendo Ultra 64.
Yes.
That thing was a beast, man. Playing Killer Instinct on
you just
that
can't
thing.
You just can't replicate it.
No, you can't. It's just leave it in the past and we can go back and revisit it whenever we want to. In terms of like just staying on the N64 for a second, like, are there any games that if you're kind of thinking of like influences that you would have for like Shovel Knight, or just like games that you kind of look back on the N64 that you just love to go back to, what comes to mind?
Oh man. Okay. Well, like, yes. I mean, all the 3D platformer games I was, like, in love with. Like, Super Mario 64, Banjo-Kazooie, like, even, like, Conker's Bad Fur Day, like...
That's a beautiful game, even though it's got lots of swears in it and...
Yeah, like, stuff. I mean, like, Rare was on fire during...
Totally.
...this 64 days. Like, like, shoot, what's that one? The game no one played.
From Rare?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of something. The Bee.
Oh. I even bought this game. It's like a third person shooter, right?
No. I was thinking the one where you like drive a Blast Corps.
Oh, Blast Corps. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, the third person shooter. That's another one. Jet Force Gemini. Yeah. Jet Force Gemini is a good one. Like Diddy Kong Racing was a weird one.
Yeah, they pumped out. I haven't even really thought about this as well, but they pumped out a ton of stuff.
Oh yeah, they were like a machine, and they were even crazier like on the NES. Right. Believe it or not, they like, oh my god, they put out so many games. It's like insane.
They developed more games than any other developer for the NES or something like that.
Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know. I was definitely really into like all the weird four player multiplayer games, like Chameleon Twist. I was like so into Chameleon Twist.
Was it just because that was a game you got, or was that a game you like, you know, read about in a magazine?
I didn't even have Chameleon Twist. My friend, like my neighbor had Chameleon Twist, and we like went and played like four player battle mode or whatever in that game like every day. I don't know. It's just like such a bizarre thing. Yeah. I mean, like Smash Bros was like huge.
Of course.
I don't know. Like the system has like such a cool library of games. I think it's like a really good comparison, I think, to like the NES days, where it's like people didn't know how to make 3D games, so they were just like putting out weird stuff.
Yeah, like Castlevania 64.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, a lot of it is crap, and a lot of it like you would never want to play it again today, and like it looks so ugly.
Yeah, I tried going back to Mission Impossible on the N64 a couple weeks ago, because that was a game that I always borrowed from my friend, and I loved that game because it was a huge movie franchise at the time, and wow, that game is impossible to play. It is so hard. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, like Super Mario 64, like blew people's minds open in terms of like how to even control a 3D game. Like before that, like Tomb Raider was the standard, where you're like moving them left and right, you're moving her left and right, and then like forward and backwards or whatever. Like she's a tank.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like what an odd way to control a game, but like no one had figured out that there's a better way to do it yet.
Yeah, I guess, man, that's just such a weird era to go back to. We got a couple other questions from listeners and things like that. I want to make sure we get in there. Technoman, I'd like to know if they would ever consider trying their hand at developing a classic style beat 'em up, which of course we now know, Double Dragon Neon is part of the background, or turn-based RPG.
So beat 'em up. I mean, we love beat 'em ups a lot. Like Double Dragon Neon is like obviously an ode to those the beat 'em ups we played in the 80s. And like even like Blood Rain Betrayal is like a 2D platformer, like mixed with like a Devil May Cry kind of like action beat 'em up kind of thing. A lot of the games I've made, actually, like Batman Brave and the Bold, Thor for the DS, are like mixes of like platformers and beat 'em ups. So like I would love to make another beat 'em up at some point. And like turn-based RPG is something we like talk about all the time as something we want to do.
Really? When you think turn-based RPG, like what are the games that come to your mind that you just absolutely love?
I mean, like any Dragon Quest or Dragon Warrior or Final Fantasy or like anything Square was putting out, in the Super Nintendo or PlayStation days, like are like, yeah, I mean, it's like, I mean, you get a little bit of it today with like Bravely Default was like, you know, blew people's minds open about how they forgot like how good a like a battle system in a RPG can be. But yeah, I mean, there's so many good RPGs, and I think it would just be fun to like create one of those, like just like super dramatized worlds. And, you know, like there's so many fun characters and art and like getting into like those really RPG like systems is something we haven't done before. You know, like really stat heavy kind of thing would be, you know, fun to explore. And then of course you have to have like your weird side mini game like Blitzball or or like
I just bought Final Fantasy X and X-2 for the Vita, right. So I've heard to be prepared for Blitzball.
Oh yeah, Blitzball is amazing. Blitzball gave it like the perfect time too, because it was like right during like the Harry Potter craze was like just starting when that game came out, and it's like sort of like a Harry Pottery. What's the Harry Potter game called? Quidditch. Quidditch. Yeah. It's like sort of like Quidditch, where you're like throwing a ball into a, like a hoop or whatever. So it's like I think it like became huge because of that like mixed melding of like idea or like people's loves.
So I have to ask this. I mean, we look at how successful Shovel Knight has been so far. Do you guys feel like the need to stick with that franchise, whether it be making a sequel or like we're talking about turn-based RPG, like that universe, I mean, from looking at it, like that might be really good for a turn-based RPG. Like you already have royalty and knights and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think like we go two ways. It's where like we would love to make something like completely radically different. Mm-hmm. That doesn't feel like Shovel Knight at all. And on the other end of the spectrum, like, yeah, we want to make like a million Shovel Knight games.
Yeah.
You know, we want it to be like, you know, Mario or Mega Man, where there's like bizarre, like Shovel Knight basketball.
Shovel Knight Battle Network.
Yeah. It's like the games you wouldn't expect, or like the games you absolutely would expect, where like, it's like Shovel Knight 2 is like a NES direct sequel, like, you know, exactly the same thing in style. It's like, I mean, we'd love to be able to explore all those things. I mean, but who knows? Like, when we're done making all the, like, the stretch goal content for Shovel Knight, I'm sure, like, we'll probably be burned out and want to do something totally different. But at that point, like, who knows what we'll want?
I got another question for you from Channing, who wanted to know, we hit on this a little bit, but was there any division in the Yacht Club Games development team regarding, you know, going, quote, NES as you remember it versus 100% faithful to the NES? So the better way that I would kind of lock this in is, you know, how did you look at the hardware of the NES and how much that you wanted to dial into that, opposed from just saying, like, we're going to make it look like an NES game, but obviously we're going to be a little bit, you know, flexible with having all the sound channels we need and being able to do all the parallax scrolling that we want.
Yeah. The idea we had, which everyone like was pretty agreed on, was like a good idea, which was like, basically like if Nintendo was to make a game like in 1995 for the NES, like what would that be like in terms of like technology? So like if they were to manufacture like one more cart that could do like a few extra additional things, like what would that be? Mm-hmm. So like the ways we broke like the NES style was like parallax backgrounds, which is like they can, the backgrounds move in like 3D depth, right? And it's like some games did that on the NES. Like they found tricks to do it, like Kirby or like Shatterhand did it. What's that metal?
Metal Storm.
Metal Storm. Metal Storm did it.
Man, you're just going down the list of games that we covered on the show. This is not. Those are two games like Shatterhand and Metal Storm. Those are games that I completely missed growing up. But
How could you find those games growing up? It's like probably five people bought them.
Exactly, and even like, well, luckily Shatterhand is still pretty inexpensive today, but Metal Storm is like $70-$80 now to get a card of that. It's kind of nuts.
Yeah, so those games, they had parallax, right? But they couldn't do like vertical parallax, or they couldn't do, you know, it was very limited in what they do. So, but it's like, if they were to make another cart, like if they were going to make Super Mario 4, I bet they would have had parallax in there. Yeah. So that was like sort of our thought process. Because that's where like all the NES games were going. And like another example would be like the music. Like most NES music has, you know, three soundtracks or three sound channels plus a noise channel, I think. Mm-hmm. But like Castlevania 3 for Famicom had its own special chip.
Exactly.
where it can output more channels. So we, you know, if they were going to make Super Mario 4, it would probably, they probably would have used more channels because like that was the trend at the time. So that was like sort of what we were thinking. But like there were like a few additional ways we broke it. Like we broke the style. Like for example, we added a few colors because like, you know, one, we're already cheating a little bit. So it's like not a big deal to cheat a little bit more, you know, and like, you know, we wanted to have like black or, you know, different skinned characters. And like, you just can't do that with the NES color palette, which is like super unfortunate, but it's the truth.
Yeah. I mean, you're faking it pretty well. Like if I showed that to someone that, you know, played NES games growing up and I just showed this to them, it's like, oh, hey, have you, you know, checked out this NES game? They actually just kind of made a remake or they ported it to the 3DS. Have you checked this out? It would convince everyone. Like it is.
Yeah, like we want it to be like how you remembered it looking rather than like how it actually looked, which might have been like a little not like not good enough. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think there was another aspect to it, which we wanted to make it like a modernized as much as possible whilst like keeping the NES standards, which is like, you know, the NES couldn't display in widescreen, which is like the game is in widescreen because we figured, you know, having black bars does, it feels like you're playing like a cheap experience nowadays. Mm-hmm. You know, like things like that where it's like, I mean, those decisions I think were pretty, like we all felt really comfortable with them as a group. But that said, like, you know, we all knew like this boss should have like 3 frames of animation when he attacks you. Cause like, that's what the NES would have done. And it won't look like an NES, unless he does 3 frames of animation. Right. Mm-hmm. But that's still like really, that's really difficult to do. You know, how do I make Spectre Knight, who's like this flowing cape all over the place, like not look awkward when he like swings his giant scythe at you. Right. In 3 frames, like 3 different positions, you're trying to make that, like that look beautiful and read well, like from a gameplay perspective, like that's really challenging. Mm-hmm. Where like adding 30 frames is like, that's easier in that, you know, I could be like drawing those 30 frames is actually easier than making those 3 frames work. So like, that's like a big challenge that I think everyone was working with, like from my, you know, from my standpoint, like implementing a gameplay for a boss, like, there's no game where I haven't put bullet hell in for a boss pattern because that's just like an easy boss pattern that's like very fun and shocking and like oh my god, so many bullets on the screen, right? That's so exciting. Mm-hmm. But like to be able to say like I can't do that for this game is like really hard to do.
It's also very stressful.
Yeah, very yeah. Stressful.
2 more questions before I let you go. First off, this is the question I'm going to ask for Mike Micah from Other Ocean. Any chance we're going to get a port to the Neo Geo Pocket Color?
Neo Geo Pocket Color. Well, it's definitely like high on the list.
Okay, so we're thinking like October, November.
I'm just waiting for Neo Geo to send me my dev kit, and I'll be like knocking it away. Right.
It must be asleep. I'll see if I can get in contact with someone there. I know Mike must know someone over there. He was able to convince Atari to send him a Jaguar dev kit when he
was. No way.
Oh yeah, he was like Mike's got some crazy stories. But anyways, that kind of breaks my heart. But if it's not the Neo Geo Pocket Color, you guys have probably gotten this question asked a ton of times. Like, are there any plans to go to other consoles outside of the stuff that you already announced?
We don't have any plans right now, but we're definitely like discussing it.
So it's like a down the road thing, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, what's really important to us is that like, it feels at home at any console we put it on. Mm-hmm. Or any device we put it on. For example, we don't want to put it on iOS cause like, it doesn't feel right to play this kind of game without a controller.
Exactly.
You know, and like if we're putting it on, you know, the Vita or something like that, like we don't want to just like dump a port onto the Vita. Like we want to have some weird back touch mini game that like creeps you out. Because like that's what a Vita, like that's what would make it feel special and at home on that console. Like the same way we put, you know, Miiverse into the Wii U and we put like the Street Pass into the 3DS. Like we want it to feel like it's special and we don't want it. And we don't want you to feel like it's like just another version of the game. Mm-hmm. It's like if you bought a Vita game, like if you bought it on the Vita or whatever, you should feel like you should be surprised when someone else tells you, oh, it's for the Wii. You should be like, oh, I thought this was like a Vita exclusive. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, that's what we're trying to go for. So like figuring out like what consoles make sense and like how we can make it feel special is like a really challenging thing to do.
No, that totally, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I, for the audience out there, knows that I am obsessed with my PlayStation Vita. And it's just because I don't really know why. It's probably because it's just an underdog. And it's like, I'm always a fan of the, whether it's the Neo Geo Pocket Color or the Dreamcast or whatever, I'm always a fan of the underdog. But
yeah, well, that screen is like absolutely gorgeous. Like every game looks so good on there, even if it's terrible.
Yeah, I know. It's it is kind of a weird piece of hardware, but like I was even holding out. I was like, beforehand, I'm like, I'm gonna wait. Eventually, maybe it might be 2 years down the road, but Sony's gonna need games for this thing because no one else is making games for it anymore. Even though there's like a ton of stuff coming out, but I'm happy that I'm gonna put this up after my review. But like the big thing for this game, like I enjoyed it so much, I bought a 3DS XL so I could play it on a bigger screen.
Oh my god! Like, wow.
Because I was holding the 2DS so close to my face. I don't know. I'm like 28. Maybe I'm getting old, but I'm like, all right, I went on Nintendo.com. They have like a really good deal in refurbished 3DS XL. So I'm like, all right, I was going to wait for a revision of that XL, but I'm just going to buy it now because I can just transfer it over to the 3DS XL and play it on there. And yeah. Like, it is just, it just kind of like surprised the crap out of me. Just how much it felt like an old NES game. So you guys hit the mark on that. Awesome. And
thank you very much.
Well, let's we'll wrap it up now, but I don't know. Is there anything else that you guys have coming up that the audience should keep an eye out for? I mean, the Back of My Play audience is pretty hardcore when it comes to like checking stuff out. So I don't know if you guys are going to be going to PAX or anything like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have lots of stuff in the pipe. We're going to PAX. We are working on, we're trying to get the game out in Europe still. If anyone's listening in Europe, I'm sorry. We're still trying to get it out there.
Is that like localization stuff or?
Yeah, it's localization. It's like working with Nintendo of Europe. Yep. To get it approved. All the business nonsense that goes along with that. Same thing for Australia. Like we're still trying to get like our rating for Australia so we can release there.
And you guys are coming out in Japan, right? With the A4 guys, are they doing that?
Yeah, we're still working on like what exactly that entail. Like oh my God, it would be so amazing if we could go to Japan and pimp the game there. give Miyamoto a hug.
Yeah, you get to see it like on the in the train cars. They always have like Nintendo ads. It'd be so crazy to see Shovel Knight in those Nintendo ads insane. In the train to that'd Akihabara.
That'd be so crazy. Yeah, so I mean, we'd love like we want to do it right in every place. Like the reason it's we didn't want to release the game in English in Europe because like if you're in France, we want you to play it in French and like have the real like true experience. It's like, you know, we see Shovel Knight like Mickey Mouse or Mario. Like it's not like an American brand. It's like a universal brand, right? And we want you to experience it like it's your own. It's like natural to you. And it feels like it's part of the world rather than like this weird American thing that you got. And like, so like if we did it in Japan, like, you know, when we release it in Japan, like, you know, we want to make it feel like a Famicom game. Mm-hmm. We don't want it to feel like, oh, it's this NES game that came over to like, we want to make sure it's like, it's got like, I forget, it's like Kana, I think is the other version of the Japanese language. That's like more simple. And that's like what they used in Famicom games. Mm-hmm. It's like, we want to make sure we have those translations, even though like that's like weird nowadays to do. And it's, yeah, and then so we have lots more stuff coming down the pipe. Like we're working on these content updates. Like right now we're starting the Play Ignite playable boss character, and then we'll be doing two more of those. We'll be doing a battle mode, we'll be doing a gender swap mode, and we'll be doing a challenge mode. So there's lots of Shovel Knight coming over the next year.
Wow. All right. Well, people can keep an eye out for all that stuff. And like I said, if you haven't picked it up, if it's available in your region, just jump on that eShop and check it out. I couldn't, recommend it anymore. It's just for this audience, for the people listening to this podcast, like, this game is made for you. So this is if you're kind of hungry for something to put on the 3DS or on your Wii U waiting for what's coming up for this fall, definitely check it out. And I think that's pretty much it for us. I think we covered just about everything that people had for us. So David, thanks for like taking an hour to talk about the game.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll definitely try to connect down the road. But like I said, people out there, it's available hopefully in your region. And if not, it's probably coming soon. So David, thanks again. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.